Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Available to stream on Star on Disney Plus, the Oscar winner for Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Actress, Nomadland.
My mom says that you're homeless.
I'm not. I'm just houseless. Don't worry about me. I'm okay.
Also the winner of 4 BAFTAs, including Best Film.
Isn't that great?
Don't miss the most celebrated film of the year, Nomadland. Available to stream on Star on Disney Plus. Subscription required. 18 plus. T&Cs apply.
By now, you'll know that Now is the new name for Now TV.
Brandon, could you have said Now one more time in that sentence?
Now, calm down.
Guys, what are you watching on Now at the moment?
The Mayor of Easttown with Kate Winslet is absolutely brilliant. I've only seen one episode, but I'm gripped.
I'm the exact same as you. I cannot wait. And you know what I love? That it's one a week. It's like Line of Duty. They're teasing us and we have to wait to find out what happens.
Exactly. We're back to the 90s and it's a good mystery and it's slowly playing out and there's very good actors in it, so I'm invested.
Do you know what I watched over the weekend, guys?
What?
Promising Young Woman.
Oh, it is such a good movie.
I finished watching it last week and I texted our WhatsApp group, and Brendan, you had also at the same time finished watching it for the second time.
We did. We just watched it at the exact same time. It's Carey Mulligan's brilliant. The storyline is incredible. It looks on the face of it like really fun and bubbly, but it's such an important message.
Yeah, I love that, the juxtaposition of the cinematography. It's all bright, bubbly, but the storyline is pretty dark. It's a very important story. But then you see Carey Mulligan's gorgeous shellac. All different colours, multicoloured, and the costume, the outfits, amazing. It's so, so good. I feel like I need to watch it again.
Join the home of brilliant entertainment with shows, movies and sport on Now with a 7-day free trial.
This is TV worth talking about.
You didn't float up the wagon on a bubble.
I'm veering towards muffins.
Stop making a tit of yourself and piss off.
This is Shrine of Duty.
Well, guys, we said it. We said it was Buckles all along.
At one point.
Did we?
I'm sure we did.
Someone said in one theory.
We did not. Hello and welcome to Shrine of Duty. I'm Brendan.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Rebecca.
Okay, guys. The main word people seem to be using is underwhelming. It's fair to say that many Line of Duty fans have been left disappointed by the season 6 finale, but lots also loved it. Jeb Mercurio has admitted he knew attempting to explore the real nature of corruption in our society wouldn't appeal to everyone. We will discuss your feelings on the show's end after Hannah's recap. Reb has been reading all your social theories. She also has your lines of Juicy and what the cast have been saying. I've been reading all of your lovely, lovely emails. Thank you so much for them, and we'll get to those as well. But first, we need to debrief after our press junket on Friday, which continued unplanned all weekend long. So,
Kai,
will we start?
It was like we were on the bleeding show.
It really was. Will we start with the Friday experience, Rebecca, that yourself and myself had?
It was absolutely hilarious. We got asked to do 16 interviews in 2 hours. So Brendan did 8, I did 8. And someone introed us saying, oh, when you can't get the cast, this is kind of the next best thing.
Did they? So these were literally, right? They were literally back-to-back interviews. It was really, it was one of the most fun but most intense things I've done in quite a while, right? So you would literally be on FaceTime audio to like BBC Cornwall, right? And you have 7 minutes. Like, it's so, they send you a schedule. It's so packedly.
Well organized.
Like, well organized, really tightly packed. And so you've got 7 minutes, and then you literally, well, you're still interviewing one of them, still being interviewed by one of them, and the next one is ringing you, and then you're just straight on. It was like my head was spinning, and also my grocery shopping got delivered in the middle of it.
Oh my God, I was sweating. I have to say though, everyone was so lovely, and there was a guy who was a producer on one of the shows. Now I can't remember what station it was, but he rang me pretending to be Ted Hastings. He was obviously a huge Line of Duty fan, which I really appreciated. I thought it was absolutely hilarious. Now guys, you were on the BBC Breakfast again on Saturday morning.
Yeah, so I did a couple of interviews myself on Friday. I had actually not planned to do any on Friday. You guys were doing the 16 interviews, super junket, like literally did more press for the show than people in the show, than Martin Compton, Gemma Curio, Vicky and Adrian probably done put together. So I ended up doing a couple of conversations on Friday that went great. And then myself and Brendan were back on the Beeb on Sunday, Brendan, was it?
Yeah, it was. We were on Sunday morning. It was a very different experience to the one that you first described, Hannah. I found it extremely like laid back, really casual. I was expecting, like when you were on the first time, I didn't sleep the night before and I wasn't even doing it.
Same.
This time, I think because Hannah, you've been on, and Reb, you'd been on as well on the Friday or the Saturday,
yeah,
I think.
See, mine was pre-recorded though, guys, which was great.
Hang on a second. Will you just, Reb, tell us what you did on the Friday? Because it was one of the most unique and incredible things I've ever seen.
The package they put together was phenomenal, and there is someone called Josh who works in BBC on BBC Breakfast who is absolutely phenomenal at his job.
Lovely
he
man.
He had such a vision for that package, and he wanted the presenters to be involved pretending to be Kate and Steve. I mean, he was gas. I chatted to him for about 40 minutes on Zoom. I mean, I was going full conspiracy theory with all the theories and everything, but absolutely gas crack, guys. I mean, we had a ball, didn't we? We're very grateful.
It was brilliant. But I think because both of you guys had already been on and done something, I felt less nervous. And also, Hannah, because we were on together, like,
yes,
I did get it. There was a slight wave. So like I had a lovely call with a girl, I think called Emma, the day before, like to do a pre-interview. Then another guy called me to do the tech setup. But it was very much like, he was like, oh yeah, your camera angle's just slightly too high. Just remove one of the books there and you're good to go.
One of your many cocktail books.
One of the cocktail recipe books.
Sorry, oh so God. Many people commented under the tweet that I put up to say, do you like cocktails? They're not all my cocktail books. Like I think two of them are.
You do make I didn't a realize good drink.
I do, thanks. Yeah.
Lovely candles in the background of your shot as well.
Yeah.
Guys, I have to say Josh is an angel, because we got asked to do the BBC again. Obviously, it's a complete and unbelievable honour. It's incredible for the podcast. But I was going for a few drinks on Saturday. So I was like really politely, but it was completely out of order. I was like, look, thank you so much for asking us on. We're absolutely thrilled, but I won't be around to do a camera test or a prereq or a little
sure
mini interview
done all
on
that
Saturday.
The week before.
Because I'll be out in the park absolutely pissed. Well, Josh, he completely understood. He was wishing me a happy birthday. He was asking me how it went. He even texted after we'd done the live interview today. I looked fresh. He couldn't have been any nicer. And I think that helped us feel so relaxed, Brendan. But I swear to God, I haven't really been drinking since Christmas. I went for plenty of drinks on Saturday. I got into bed at midnight and I just said, please God, let me wake up tomorrow morning. Brendan, I had you ringing me. I had my mom getting up at 6 to make sure I was up to do it. And as I hadn't tested it, I just went downstairs, plugged in the computer and just hoped that I was going to end up on the BBC. And it all worked out. Thanks be to God. I also just want to clear up for the tens of people that asked. The photograph in Craig's mom's kitchen.
The big painting behind you.
It's the big
so
feather painting.
So many of my friends have texted me to ask where it's from.
So it's actually from Michael Murphy's, and a lovely woman DM'd me on Instagram and she was from America and she's like, can you tell me what shop that's from? And I'm like, yeah, it's from a gorge shop called Michael Murphy's, which is in the Airside retail park. I don't even know if it's anywhere else.
I feel like I know that a radio ad.
I don't know.
It's a Reese Pink logo. She went on and checked. Now the print is still available, but it's currently out of stock. But you can actually have it notified. You can have it notify you when it comes back into stock. So that's what that woman has done.
Is this then, QVC?
Literally. Like literally Shrine of Duty sponsored by Micheál Murphy. And then I'd also just like to announce that the two lamps that were in shot are from IKEA, guys. And thank you so much for your tweets.
I have the exact same lamp, but I only have one of them, Breeda. Only one.
And Brendan, I have the candles that you have as well. Oh, I just don't have the 75 cocktail recipe book. So there you go.
Guys, will we also talk about how stressful yesterday morning just ended up being for me? So we ended up actually getting... I think it's important to address this.
Right,
I had a shocker of a morning, right? So we'd do quite a few radio interviews which weren't expected. And then obviously, you know, the we felt a bit flat after the final, let's be honest. Early to do those. Felt like I was doing Jeb Mercurio's PR for the morning. I was having to defend the show from a hilt. I was like, guys, I didn't write the fucking thing. Like, leave me alone.
But also, it's still a great
it's
drama.
It's 7 a.m. on a bank holiday Monday. Stop shouting at me, okay? So then I'd done the few interviews in my bed. Like, I hadn't got out of bed, not a tooth brushed, nothing.
Ew.
And then as it was 7 a.m.
No,
I shouldn't have even been awake.
It's such a vivid thing. You know that feeling when your tooth is furry?
Oh, stop. They weren't furry. Ugh.
And, hairy tooth.
Stop it. I have very good dental hygiene, by the way. I got it clean recently and my dentist was like, clearly
Brendan,
you were
milling the gin and tonics the night before. You definitely had a hairy tooth. Could you stop?
You do with the alcohol makes it too hairy.
With the alcohol,
hairy.
Yeah. Anyway, it's my dentist said clearly I was bored in lockdown because my teeth were super clean. So anyway, finished all the radio interviews and then decided I'd treat myself to a hash brown from McDonald's. So ordered it on Uber Eats, right? Now, guys, did it take, was it an hour and a half? I think it was an hour and a half, possibly 2 hours. Okay. And then,
I checked back in a good while later and it still hadn't come.
So I ordered a sausage and egg McMuffin, a hash brown, and they didn't have any lattes. So I got an orange juice, right? Grant. Waited an hour and a half. Could have been 2 hours. It arrived. No fucking hash brown. Guys, I was livid. It was only the hash brown that I wanted. The muffin, I could have hopped it off the wall. So I messaged Uber Eats and I was like, guys, like I was hangry. I was like, half the order's missing. The muffin is inedible.
Give us a QVC cell here muffin, now. How are they?
The muffin is inedible. I need a refund. And they went, I screen grabbed it and sent it to you guys. And they went, hi, we will refund you for the missing item. Here is €1.62. I was incandescent. The next thing, as I'm reading this email outside my front drive, I'm like, what the fuck was that? My absolutely wedged recycling bin had been knocked over in the fucking storm and all the paper and plastic was flying around the drive. I had to run out hangry in the wind and rain trying to catch all my recycling like I was in a dodgy fucking version of the Crystal Maze. I was not happy.
Oh my God. You know, when you're meanwhile, just so tired and hungry as well, and you're waiting for the hash brown. It just doesn't
deliver. Come. The hash brown never came.
I thought you were getting at least a €25 voucher from McDonald's. Like,
one,
do you know,
€1.62. €1.62.
Well, I hope you spent it well, my pet. Get yourself a scratch card.
Delivery would never.
I mistimed an interview with Five Live and I was in the car, emergency trip to the pet shop to get tennis balls because Ciso booted her last one into a river and it's the only thing that keeps her quiet. So I was up there and I was like, right, I'm on Five Live in 20 minutes. Do I think I can get down to Nando's and get into the car park, collect it and get back before I have to do the interview? But had to do the interview on the side of the road and I could feel the Nando's going soggy. You know, the way it doesn't deliver well. Yeah, but guys, we made it through.
We did.
And then I did an interview with the actor who plays Tommy Hunter.
Oh my God,
but I couldn't see his face, but I could just hear him. Brian's a lovely man.
Well, Rebecca, his
nothing
hair
like his
was positively billowing when I watched back the clip today. He looked incredible.
Good for him.
As did you, my love.
Thanks, pet.
Okay, are we ready?
Oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
Jesus,
Hannah.
Guys, we were shiting on for 10 minutes about ourselves.
Season 6, episode 7. Take it away, bitch.
The episode opens with Steve Arnott watching back season 5's interview of Ted by Patricia Carmichael. He watches as Ted denies telling Lee Banks that John Corbett was an undercover officer. Later, Steve meets Kate downstairs in AC12. They're both upset that Ted has lied. And while Steve pushes to let it go because he's headed for early retirement, Kate reminds her mate that they've often criticized officers who've taken retirement to dodge disciplinary action. Kate then wonders if Steph is blackmailing the gaffer. Steve defends Chicken Licken a little too hastily. And Kate, who doesn't miss a beat, rolls her eyes and says, oh, for God's sake, Steve. Steve is saved by a phone call from Chris to Kate and the pair head to the warehouse. Chris has overseen a dig of the warehouse floor and found not a leg, not a Carly Kirk, a storage box. Let's find out what's in there, ordered Steve. In the next scene, Steve has finally responded to his emails from occupational health and he's having a meeting with, like, is it a doctor, a therapist, a HR manager?
Yeah, I don't know. Just like the occupational health dude. I don't know.
Nameless man. Now, as listener Alan, who had an NHS email, predicted a couple of weeks ago, Steve is not in any major trouble as everything he's been taking is over the counter, but the doses are very high. Now, your man is sweeping through his notes on the iPad and Steve really has had a shocking few years. He was tortured by Ryan with a bulge cutters in 2012. He was fucked down the stairs in 2014. Actually, someone on Twitter, I think it was this afternoon, was speaking about the way we used fucked as a verb.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about Georgia being fucked out the window and she didn't understand. She only knew it as like the sexual, like with a sexual meaning. But
no.
In Ireland, and I'm pretty sure England as well, fucked is a verb for pretty much anything that you want to do.
You fucked it.
Ruined.
Broken, thrown, ruined. Negative things that are happening. So Steve was fucked down the stairs in 2014. In 2017, he shot Tina in the tit and was involved in two shootouts in 2020. So Steve is claiming that he's completely fine despite these many traumatizing incidents, but your man isn't buying it. Now, in fairness, on top of everything else, Steve did watch Tony Gates leap in front of a van,
yeah,
and he was there when his love interest, George Trotman, was thrown out a bleeding window. Like,
you wouldn't
that
was be right.
Mental.
No, you wouldn't be right after that. Yeah.
Not at all. So your man suggests Steve take time off work. He refuses because they're on a huge case. So then he asks that Steve voluntarily surrender his firearm. Steve will then need to have some more medical investigations and Ted will be advised. So Steve is heartbroken and it's actually very sad and he does some brilliant acting here. However, he decides to tell Ted personally. And he goes to his office, prepares for a bollocking, but Ted is just glad that he's getting some help and aww, a shocked Steve thanks his gaffer and leaves the office.
I found as well, like when they were saying that he couldn't have a gun, I was like, oh, Steve's going. I was like, Steve's not going to be able to defend himself. He's not going to have a gun in that raid and he's going to die.
No, we didn't get that much drama, did we?
No.
It's in my notes for later on, but I'm sorry, that was foreshadowing and it just didn't play out. It didn't pan out and they really had a good opportunity to do something there. You're going to take a gun off a main character. Let's see that play out later when they're put in peril and they need their gun. But they just didn't do that. Okay, Kate is watching back AC12's interview of Joe Davison conducted by Ted, Steve and Carmichael. She's very conveniently managed to connect her Apple AirPods to a non-Apple desktop. Good for you, love. Steve asks Joe. She's sitting there with two AirPods in, no wires, and looking at the Dell laptop. So delighted for you. Would love a blog on how to do that.
Wait, does that not work on everything? Does that only work on Apple devices?
Oh, yeah, Bluetooth. Yeah.
Just, can you connect it? So am I the thing?
That's
here?
A question for Amanda Yao.
Yeah, it is. Go on, Amanda
Yao. If Amanda Yao could tweet us I can connect my AirPods.
Yeah, it's just Bluetooth. Yeah, it doesn't have to be an Apple product, does it? It's just
not
Bluetooth.
Sure. No, yeah. No idea. I'm not that fancy. I steal my boyfriend's.
I'm going to be investigating that later on because I've often said that my life would be changed if I could only connect my AirPods to the telly and then I would have no reason to ever remove them from my ears.
Or to communicate with anyone.
Brendan, in my happy place. Steve asks Joe who she believed to be her real father if she didn't know it was Tommy. Did he control you the same way Tommy Hunter did? Joe doesn't reply but looks distraught and Kate stares curiously into the distance. So it's night time and Steve is driving and his back is Adam and Steph has left him a voice note wondering if he's okay as she hasn't heard from him in a while and then he parks in an underpass and grimaces in pain. Now I'm sorry, but he wasn't pulled in at the side of the road. He was in an underpass and we've seen him in that underpass before. And maybe I'm hashtag overthinking line of duty, but I just want to know why he was there because on the third watch, I found it very suspicious. So Kate and Steve are at the hill for a briefing from Chris on the contents of the box discovered under the warehouse floor. It contained a workshopped firearm, black gloves and a bomber all used in the murder of Gail Vella. DNA inside the gloves revealed the murderer to be Carl Banks. And the season's whodunit is wrapped up And we're very swiftly moving on because, hang on a second, what's that? The box includes a number of other crucial pieces of evidence that have been missing for years. A knife covered in Manith's blood and Ryan Pilkington's prints. A knife covered in the blood of John Corbett and Ryan Pilkington's prints. And finally, a knife covered in the blood of, help me Tony, Jackie Laverty with Tony Gates' prints. Steve reminds his colleagues that Tony's prints were put on the knife after he was knocked out back in season one to use as blackmail. Kate then acknowledges that the items were kept in the box as leverage going back years. Steve then asks Chris if there were any more items relating to Thirlwell, Buckles or Osborne, and we didn't get an answer. I saw a lot of people on social media were a bit put off by the convenience of that box of really important items.
Yeah, a lot of people have emailed to say that's quite convenient. But it is, I guess, plausible because they wanted to keep stuff to like you say, to blackmail people. Mm. So that is a genuine reason as to why they would all be kept.
OCG.
But it is a really easy, it was very handy for the plotline, yeah.
Yeah, OCG MO, because they do it with, obviously,
the condoms.
Yeah. So they've been doing this the whole time, and yeah. I suppose that made Ryan always be fearful of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, I said it in a tweet, we'll talk about it again later on, but a rewatch of this episode does help, because when I first saw that box, I was like, oh, would you piss off, magic box here to save the day. And also, Gail Vella's murder was a huge part of the trailer, a huge part of the press of the show, and then all of a sudden it was just solved and we didn't really talk about it again.
Release the podcast.
Release the Gail Vella tapes. But on a rewatch, I found when I calmed down a little bit and took in the scenes that I was actually a little bit happier with how things have panned out. So back in AC12, Kate and Steve meet Chloe and Ted in a briefing room. Ted congratulates the duo on cracking the Gail Vella case, and Kate plans to have the charges against Terry dropped. Chloe tells the team that two bodies were found in Spain and they were formally identified as Señor Thirlwell and his wife. And the laptop with an IP address in Spain, it was a decoy all along.
Go on, Amanda, yeah.
I know, but I really wanted Jimmy Nesbitt to come in now, all guns blazing and loads of drama.
Yes, yeah,
Nigel Morton, guys.
Nigel Morton, yeah. I really wanted the same.
Really wanted him not to be dead.
It was wide open.
Yeah.
Did somebody say cybercrime? Amanda Yeo was just outside the door and appears with new MSN Messenger
intel. I love this. She was like, sorry for barging in. I was like, you're more than welcome, love. Come in.
Yeah, exactly. Well, literally, between Amanda Yeo and Chloe, we'd be lost without them.
Guys, they deserve to be invited to the pub with Kate and Steve.
Yeah.
Shocking.
At the very least. So Amanda Yeo has just intercepted a new conversation which reads on the MSN, JD definitely high risk, contacts in BP, and then a thumbs up emoji. Definitely is spelt wrong. Guys, it's the fourth man. Ted jumps into action, asking Chloe to check the spelling against all their newly acquired Operation Lighthouse and Lawrence Christopher files. Meanwhile, at Brentis Prison, Joe Davidson is brought for a post-charge interview at The Hill. She's led to a white van by some dodgy-looking female prison officers, and she's nervous. The worst one of them all, who is honestly almost like pantomime evil-looking in the face, isn't she?
Really,
it's very
is, yeah.
over the top. Is sitting up front. But not to worry, AC12 are on the way. However, mid-convoy to the prison, Chloe, who's back at base, reveals a production order for Joe has been approved and she's on her way to The Hill. The requesting officer on the production order is one DS Chris Lomax and the supporting officer, Kate Fleming. Fuck that, says Ted, and the convoy floor it after Joe.
He says, driver, put your foot flat to the floor.
Yes,
I really thought as well that this could have gone somewhere really interesting, and it didn't.
Guys, I had Chris Lomax. I had to apologise. I said, Chris Lomax, you bent bastard, when I was live tweeting. And then I said, oh, sorry, maybe it was forged. But who forged that?
Well, let's see how season 7 pans out. And I do believe we're getting one. But Brendan, I completely agree with you. Someone should have died in this sequence. And
yeah.
I'm not being morbid, I didn't want it to happen. I was so anxious with all of the cast tweeting these like deeply sentimental, very like definitive ending style statements right before the episode aired at 5 to 9. I do think we should have had at least Joe Davidson or someone of that level, of Chris or someone, go, because there was just not enough peril in this episode at all.
I honestly think after this length of time, it genuinely, it's a TV show. I think we would love to be sitting here now, obviously upset to have lost one of the big three.
Yes.
But we would have loved it. We would have been heartbroken. We would have come away gone, oh my God, I can't believe Ted, Kate or Steve are gone. That was incredible. Oh my God, devastated. Missed them so much. Blah, 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 blah. I feel like that's where we should be right now.
At the same time, though, guys, I'm relieved because I felt like the episode was a little bit rushed. And if we had lost one of them in an episode that like that, when everything was trying to be tied up, I think I would have been devastated. I'd rather one of them go in the final season when they try and get the top dog.
But like, take out Joe, bring Kate's husband or ex-husband and son down there, create a bit of tension, like do something. It's just, this show has never been afraid to kill people ever. Yeah. Like Danny Waldron came into it. He was the guest lead for season three. He died by the end of the first episode. So I can feel why a lot of people are disappointed, because all of a sudden a show that was never afraid to fuck people out windows, throw them downstairs, cut Candy Newton's arm off, take the guest lead out in the first episode, slit John Corbett's throat in episode four, now all of a sudden seems to be holding back on doing, committing to any type of character removal. Yeah, and I really thought this sequence was going to be the one where it happened.
And surely OCG would have opened fire as well. Like, they just didn't they didn't open fire.
They normally get out and they're shooting already.
I did think that was a bit weird. But you know when they do arrest the prison guard, I have a line of juicy.
Okay, brilliant. So we're getting to that. And then just one more point on the sequence. Like, let's see Buckles in the back of this car getting caught or something like that. Like, just have the same outcome, but just like ramp up the drama. There were so many opportunities I felt that were maybe missed. Okay. So it's all go. We've got helicopters and everything. Next, we see Joe's white van turn down a residential street. It is cornered by two OCG black Range Rovers. They prepare for an ambush, but surprise, bitch, Steve is in the driver's seat with his gorgeous orange taser.
Loved
it. And Kate's in the back. You're all under arrest. Goodbye.
Guys, it was, the best moment of the episode. It was fucking brilliantly done.
It was brilliant. But do you know what? I just keep thinking, Reb, and honestly, I think it was the cleverest thing you said on this podcast. Your desire for Kate to be revealed as one of the helmeted people who were involved in the ambush of Lindsay Denton.
I know. I think they might have all died, though. I can't remember.
But couldn't they have just pulled the helmet off and shown Buckles? Couldn't they have had him in the back of this car?
Imagine.
Let's catch him in the act rather than have Chloe catch him off screen.
I know, imagine Buckles and Jackie Laverty, like a scene of them or something. We would have all squealed if we'd seen her back. You know, it might have just softened the blow.
We needed that screamy moment. And I think this is when the episode reached its height and it sort of slowed down after that. And that is normal for a drama. It's usually the penultimate episode of a series is where all the drama is. And the final episode is slower. But this was the big reveal and it just fell flat. So anyway, everyone got arrested, including the prison officer. And Reb, did we have a line of juicy?
And Ted says,
wrong button.
My God, was that a cat?
Was that a bird?
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Sounds like a rat. Ted says, arrest her. Stick her in the back with her wee mate. I loved that.
They're gone. Bye. Okay, Ted congratulates the team and soon they're back at AC12 interviewing Joe. Kate is pushing Joe to apply for witness protection. Now, she's apparently off the hook for Kate's attempted murder and no hard feelings there at all, as she worked under the coercion of others. She can live the life she should have lived if she tells them who the top man is, very reminiscent of the pushing Jimmy Lakewell in the back of the van to reveal his intel. Steve tells Joe that she was taken out of Brentis prison to be killed and that the order came from the man that she believed to be her father. And she's crying here and it's so heartbreaking. Her little face, I just think she's so adorable. My heart was broken watching it. So we never hear Joe utter the name of the person that she thinks to be her father. But next, AC12 are at Queen's Chase. Now, I didn't cop it even though we've been here before. Ted is briefing a large team on their plan to arrest the suspect. We then see forensics examining his cell, but they find nothing. Back at HQ, it's revealed that the man is former Chief Superintendent Patrick Fairbank. Now, this reveal was kind of lost on me, guys. What did you think?
Yeah, like I didn't really care that much. Like, I mean, I don't know, because I don't know. I hate Fairbank. I just was like, ugh, to your man.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of wanted it to be Thirlwell again. I just wanted to see Senor Thirlwell on the screen.
See, I think they were expecting this to be a huge gaspy moment, but it just wasn't for me.
We know he's bent and evil and awful already.
Yeah.
But that did that not turn, you know, the search of that cell, and I absolutely thought it was Fairbank at the start, but then when we come back to that later, was it not revealed to be Buckle's holding cell that they were searching?
No, so they searched Fairbank's cell and found nothing. And then they do search in a very similar way, Buckle's cell later.
Yeah, cool.
So Patrick Farewell denies sending Thirlwell to Spain, denies ordering Gail Vella's murder, denies having a secret MSN laptop and knowing who Joanne Davidson is. As usual, Fairbanks denies everything and plays dumb. Ted storms out of the interview, his hair billowing in a light breeze. And just when all hope was lost, Chloe rings Steve. She's only gone and solved the whole bleeding case. Now, I was very confused by the Fairbanks sequence because I kind of went away going, Was he ever even involved? Did Tommy Hunter and Buckles and everyone else who was bent at the time just tell Joanne Davidson that Fairbanks was her father, never inform him of it? And then she just always thought she was speaking to Fairbanks, but she was speaking to Buckles, Hilton, Cotton and whoever else? Or was he fully involved and has forgotten, or was he involved and he's pretending he's forgotten?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
But it's one of the things that you just said.
I'm not sure entirely. What happened there? Okay. Chloe solved the whole thing on her own. So she found a handwritten report from the 2003 Lawrence Christopher case where definitely is spelled incorrectly. Oh, and another one from Operation Lighthouse. H is revealed via the officer's signature on both reports. Kate, Ted and Steve are shocked.
It was really good because I was like, oh my God, okay. I was like, so back from the Lawrence case, and I was like, and they were still there in 2019, and I was honestly racking my brains. I was like, who?
I just kept thinking Osborne.
So did I. I was just like, Osborne.
Yeah.
So I guess that, well, it didn't occur to me for one second that it was Buckle. So I suppose that was a surprise, but it just didn't hit the way I presume they
when
wanted
they
it to.
When they said Operation Lighthouse, I knew it was Buckles.
Okay.
Did you know, Reb?
So I was like, oh, it's Osborne. And then they said, and he worked on Operation, like, and this is from Operation Lighthouse. And I was like, oh my God, it's Buckles.
And how did you feel in that moment?
I find the Buckles situation, what's the word? I don't mind that it was Buckles because I get that. I think he's the fourth man, but I don't think that's the end of the corruption or that he's the top dog.
Yeah.
But I wish we had Osborne on the laptop at the end of the episode to say to be continued.
Yeah.
I'm totally with you there. So Ted congratulates Chloe and wants to run off and tell Carmichael and save his job in AC12, but the mates stop him in his track. They make a point that this inquiry will throw the team into the spotlight. They don't know who to trust, and anything that could potentially discredit them will be used against them, i.e. the 50K. They bring it up with Ted, and Ted asks for loyalty in a very sort of like, it was a bit sly and it wasn't very Ted-like.
It was sassy. He reminded
Steve that he had his back when it came to the painkiller misuse. But Kate quickly reminds Ted that they, in fact, haven't ratted him out yet. And that is loyalty. Right, says Ted, it's time to clear it up. They all sit down. He was tricked into taking the money and it was found before he could return it. But first, he hid half of it in case things turned nasty and he needed to use it to bribe his way out of issues with the OCG. When no one suspected the missing half, he decided to give it to Steph. Oh, but Steve and Kate are two steps ahead. They chatted to Lee Banks and know that Ted ratted John Corbett out. However, Ted denies this. He admits to telling Lee there was an informant in the OCG, but not going into specifics about who it was. He hoped this would bring John to ground at the time that they were trying to bring him in. And when it got him killed, Ted was heartbroken, as John Corbett was the son of a woman that Ted once loved, Anne Marie McGillis. Ted says, if there was one thing I could take back, it would be that. What a terrible thing I did. Giving Steph the money was Ted's way of atonement. He then delivered the first of many of Ted's line of juices in the episode. Speaking about Steph, Ted says,
what did he say?
Who's going to judge what I did? Her the law, my colleagues.
God. Guys, this whole speech by Adrian Dunbar was so emotional. You know, you felt the remorse, the regret, the terrible thing that he did. He also delivered two excellent lines of Juicy before that to Kate and Steve. He says, and that's the battle, and battle we shall. And he says, you two look like you've lost the shilling and found the penny.
I loved that one.
Excellent. Also, guys, did you hear Suso barking there?
Yeah, does she want to come on the podcast?
She's trying to, but I've tried to distract her with a squeaky tennis ball, so let's see how we get on. Okay, here we go. It's the big reveal. 16,000 armed officers march into AC12 HQ. A person in handcuffs exits a white van. His identity is concealed. Meanwhile, Kate, Ted and Steve prepare the glass box for the spectacular we have waited years for. The iPad is plugged in, pages are positioned, everyone has water and a pen. It's like those 5 minutes before you start the leave and search. You're just shuffling your bits around your table. Outside, the fourth man is marched towards the building. We see a dodgy runner, but nothing else. We're walking. We finally reach the front door of the building. You popped off to make a cup of tea, do the weekly shop, hang the washing.
I was like, show us some, for God's sake.
Long. And Carmichael just watching on. Like, Steve then goes to type the name into the iPad, but you don't see it. I was screaming at the television.
You've unpacked the weekly shop. You're back just in time to see the AFOs exit the lift. Meanwhile, Carmichael has been delivering one of her trademark stares from Ted's office. We're walking. We're in the room. The beep begins. The interview starts. And finally, 3 seasons of the show and 19 and a half hours of television since Dot's dying declaration and hate is revealed.
Buckles, baby.
It was funny because I was like, who is it? And then I was like, oh my God, Buckles. And then I was like, Buckles, it's Buckles. And I was just sort of like, yeah, it's Buckles.
Right under our eyes. We said this. Do you remember we did a preview of season 5?
Yeah.
And we were like, it has to be Buckles. He's been there since season 1. He was back in season 4. He's going to be back again. I mean, we said it in our recap of season 5.
We did say it, but can I also just say, we all listened back to audio recently. And in August of last year, the three of us hadn't a fucking clue who Buckles was. Like, we hadn't.
Didn't know his name.
No, guys, we didn't know until Jed tweeted about it. We're like, oh, yeah.
August of 2020, we hadn't a fucking clue who Buckles was.
Brendan, don't feed us on the podcast.
Yeah, bloody hell, Brendan. Bloody hell. We wanted to have our moment that we said it once.
But we did say it.
We solved it.
We did say it, yeah.
God, guys, we're good, aren't we?
I was really delighted that it was Buckles, guys. I wasn't disappointed at all. The only thing I would have changed is how it was revealed. I think we should have caught him in the action rather than Chloe solving it off screen. That is the only thing I would have changed. I would have put another big action sequence in there. I would have had Buckles in the back of a black Range Rover caught in the act. And then I would have had Chloe pieced together the definitely as proof after the fact. That's all I would have changed.
Yeah. I'm happy with Buckles being the fourth man. But in him being the fourth man, they did rubbish the whole H thing. H is not a thing.
No, it's but four high that. Officers. It's not. Corruption doesn't end there.
Yeah,
corruption
exactly.
Goes on
it
forever.
Continues.
Yeah.
I'm delighted for you, Brendan, though, because H is over now.
Thank the Lord. In the words of Ted Hastings.
Let's look at the evidence against Buckles' baby, which AC12 have in spades. A laptop was recovered from Buckles' prison cell, which was rerouting to an IP address in Spain. So we did see Buckles' cell ripped apart, as was Fairbanks, but this time we found a laptop. Conversations pulled from the laptop show a misspelling of the word definitely. His fingerprints are all over the device. He answers no comment when asked if he ordered the murder of Joe, Kate, Gail and Jimmy. Doesn't matter though, they have him banged to rights living in an absolutely stunning red brick mansion in Edge Park.
Divine.
The property was bought under the company name Hole 10 Holdings. Now, Hole 10, I think that's a golf reference.
Is it Aston Villa?
No, it's there. It's one of the stands. Yeah, it's one of the Villa stands.
Okay, fair enough. And Nigel Boyle, actually the actor behind Buckles, is also a major Villa fan. So I'm delighted for him there. The company also owns a timeshare in Gran Canaria with an estimated total property value of $3 million. Buckles is a millionaire, bitch.
I was devo, though, that the timeshare thing was to do with him. I know we knew, like, Kate was wearing the same jumper and blah, blah. I still thought Nigel Morton or Senor Thurwell. I still was waiting, even though it was confirmed
Rebecca,
that he was dead.
The property theory is my finest work on this podcast.
It was really good work. Yeah.
It came to nothing, guys. It amounted to absolutely nothing.
Either did Steph Corbett living with someone who was watching the Sky Sports.
Well, season 7, my love.
My love.
We'll talk about it later on, but Tommy Hunter is 100% coming back. I'm sorry.
Oh, guys, I said it to him during the interview yesterday.
Well, tell us what he said.
Well, I was like, well, Brian, like some people on the podcast think that Tommy Hunter is alive. And then Brian was like, oh, you know, I'm going to be filming again in September. And then, like, you know, he was doing a kind of convincing thing. And then he was like, or I could be lying. And I was like, ah, Brian, come on. We'd love to see you back, even though you're an awful, awful person in Line of Duty.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
What was his accent like, Greb? Do it for us.
No, I'm really bad at doing accents, guys. You know that.
It was just his normal accent, wasn't it?
He's Scottish.
He's Scottish. Scottish.
I'll let the Scottish people decide that.
Yeah,
one.
Oh, for God's sake.
Okay, so Kate delivers a vicious line of juicy here. Do you have it, Reb?
Okay. Always the same crap suits, dud cars. I mean, you never put your hand in your pocket when it's your round.
Oh, and Buckles wasn't happy with that at
Je
all.
J'adore.
But they're not stopping there. AC12 have found a second laptop under the floor of the Red Brick Mansion with MSN conversations between Buckles, Lisa McQueen and John Corbett. He is firing out the no comments, but Ted isn't backing down. Do you have this line of juicy, Reb?
Yep. I think the secret life, the big house, the fast cars, the bits on the side, Deborah Devereaux, is that what turned your head?
Dirty Deb.
I think that's one of my favourite like line reads that Ted has ever done. It just keeps going, the bits on the side, Deborah Devereaux. The most mundane basic motive of them all, plain and simple greed. And then Ted puts it to Buckles, how some people can fail upwards, beggars belief. Line of juicy, your corruption was mistaken for incompetence. Now, Buckles' ego gets in the way here when Ted calls him a blundering fool. They have played him perfectly. So he goes into this little speech. Yeah, right. I'm a blundering fool. I'm only the one who made total mugs out of you lot.
Total mug.
Total slag.
I wasn't a little bit of a mug. I was a total mug.
Total bastard bollocks. Okay, he then delivers his little speech. He says the Carmichael isn't in the room because she doesn't want to be associated with institutionalised corruption because officially it doesn't exist after Rohan and Andrea made that gorge statement at the bottom of the steps a couple of episodes ago. He then goes for four words.
Immunity. God, I was a bit fast okay, there, wasn't I?
Because Hannah's on Zoom. I was trying to do both, guys. I was trying to harmonise.
We actually should learn Bridge how to gap. Harmonise it if there's a season 7.
Okay, go now. Okay, I'll do alto, someone do soprano, and then what's the other one?
Okay, so I'll go low.
I'm alto, bitch. Oh. you're lower than me. Okay, let's try, right?
So what am I, high?
Yeah.
And mine's going to be off as well.
Okay, so I'll be in the middle.
Okay, let's go. Okay, ready? 1, 2, 3.
Immunity.
Brendan, you're not meant to be low.
Sorry, I don't know where I was supposed to be.
Sounds like a choir boy.
We're walking in the air in the corner.
I think the most professional thing for us to do is to leave that there, and if there's a season 7, we can work on that in the meantime.
We'll do a remix.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so I was very confused by the reasoning behind Buckles thinking that he ever could get immunity and witness protection, but I've watched it 3 times now and I have it now. I'm happy with it talking about. He essentially knows that the police are not going to want to arrest him. even though he's caused so much murder and mayhem, mm-hmm. because it just looks bad for what they've already announced to the public. It's a very Jill Bigelow stance on how things are going to go. So, okay, Steve says, we'll think about immunity and witness protection. Give us something. So, Buckles talks. Tommy Hunter was the top man. After he went, and notice the word went, not after he died.
Yes.
He went somewhere.
Went.
Bit. Tommy Hunter's in Spain. He's with Nigel Morton. See you next season. Thanks a million. After he went, they all split into different OCGs. I just pass on the orders. It used to be Fairbank and Thurwell. Then it was Hilton and Cotton. And now they've gone. It's just, and before Buckles can finish, Ted shouts, you, the last man standing. Now, what I thought was interesting here was that it was pairs. So we had Fairbank and Thurwell. Mm. We had Hilton and Cotton. Now, Buckles couldn't finish the sentence because Ted couldn't keep himself back. But is he paired?
Jill and Osborne.
Yeah, there's something going
or
on there. Or is it Buckles
Osborne.
And Osborne?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So clearly they like to, the OCG like to have two people at a time. I thought that was great. And that's when I started to realise, okay, calm down a bit. I think we're getting a season 7 because I think that's what a lot of my distress going into that episode was. I sort of believed it to be the last episode of all time. And then I was like, hang on now. We also had that production order, which I don't think they have time to solve. So there was a few loose ends starting to be left. So Buckles then admits to ordering the Eastfield robbery. He denies organising Lakewell, Thurwell and Gail Vella's murders. He just passes things on. They just kept asking me to sort bigger and bigger stuff, Buckle says. Ted then delivers an impassioned line of juicy here.
I don't have it, go on.
You're sitting on the other side of the table asking for witness protection. It's me you're going to need protection from.
Yes, I love that.
And then Buckles goes, would you like a glass of water?
Oh, that was rude.
Rude.
I seen a couple of people tweeting that they really fancied him after he said that. I thought that was so funny.
No wonder, you know, just he does well with Deborah Devereaux and whatnot.
I thought as well during this glass box spectacular, the camera kept cutting to outside the glass box and focusing on the AFO outside the door. And I was like, come on. And I mean, look, I know we've had it, but I was like, give us an urgent exit required. It just, the camera did keep lingering on the AFO at the door. Yeah.
I was waiting for Chris Lomax to come in and say, I was waiting for it.
Lads, it would have been brilliant. It just would have been brilliant. So now AC12 understand the murders of Signor Thurwell and Jimmy Lakewell, but Gail was different. The OCG had no good reason to order such a high-profile assassination, they put it to Buckles.
Yeah.
But Buckles and Osborne did.
Yes.
If Gail's investigation into the corrupt Lawrence Christopher case came to light, they were in big trouble. Uh-oh, if Buckles answers, he will then implicate either himself, Osborne, or both. If he doesn't answer the questioning, he's failed to cooperate, making him ineligible for witness protection. And that, Ian Love, is a checkmate.
It Ted was says, so fucking good.
No one makes mugs out of AC12.
Interview terminated. Now that was deadly.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I think it went over a lot of people's heads because everyone was waiting for an urgent exit required. And your adrenaline and your anticipation wasn't letting you concentrate to the dialogue, which was actually brilliant. They literally did a verbal chest move on Buckles. It was so clever. So I urge people, if you're still disappointed in the finale, calm down, go back and watch it. You will feel
Hannah, you explained that really well though, because I kind of did miss that Gail Vella thing, and
it's
I'm like
confusing.
Oh my god, we know Buckles is the fourth man, but you know, it's Osborne still. Like, please give us a season 7, please.
They backed him into a corner. They were very clever.
Yeah,
like, they obviously
fantastic.
Had this game plan. They were like, he's an idiot. And I did tweet prematurely, again, as I have a habit of doing, that Buckles wasn't thick. But what I meant by that was, like, he was the fourth man. He was clever enough to tie it all together, to pull the wool over Joe Davidson's eyes, to put bleeding golf pictures in his office and overplay it so much that no one thought to look at him.
Yep.
But he wasn't clever enough to know that you can knock out witness protection without revealing information, and the only information he has is information that would implicate himself. Goodbye. Okay. Later, Kate and Steve celebrate the big win with a few pints in the pub. No sign of Chloe, considering she solved the whole bleeding case.
Rude. And Amanda Yeo. Where's Amanda Yeo?
No, like literally Chloe and Amanda Yeo carried AC 12 pretty much single-handedly across the full 7 episodes. Maybe next time, Chloe. Kate hints that she's coming back and the mates discuss what to do about the gaffer. Steve is delighted, like he actually has the biggest smile on his face when Kate talks about potentially returning to AC 12. It's so cute. And then Kate says, do you have this as a line of juicy, Reb?
You don't realise what you've got until it's gone. And then she also later on is like to Steve when asking about Steph Corbett, she's like, you might want to be careful, mate. You might end up on your own. And Steve replies, I'm not on my own. I've got you, mate.
Yeah.
You know what, though?
It was the first time since season one or two that I saw a glimmer of, again, maybe something more than friendship between the two of them.
Well, there was a little look. There was absolutely a little look.
Can I say one thing as well? We wouldn't have got that emotional scene between the two of them wrapped up if Amanda or Chloe were there. I hate to say it because they should have been in the pub with them, but I just don't think we would have got that look.
They could have been sitting down at a table and they could have had that moment at the bar before they brought the drinks over.
I agree.
Well, I would have liked to see Ted put, you know, the card behind the bar, because he did do that when they nailed Tilton, and I just think that would have been nice because there's been a lot of hard work done by people.
No, guys, the also, like, the merging and everything, they don't have the company card anymore because Osborne and Carmichael have got rid of that. It's miserable.
Oh, do you know what? You're actually dead right. So Kate brings up the painkiller addiction and Steve is worried that he might be taken off active duty. Hashtag season 7 foreshadowing. Sticking to one drink, she put the tomb still early enough to drive up to Liverpool. Looks like he's going to knock it on the head with Steph, though, as he's got you, mate. Now, your man from occupational health is back. We presume he's talking to Steve, but surprise, bitch, it's Kate. She chats about Josh keeping her going and working with one of the best. She says, line of juicy.
Go on.
To be honest, I don't know what I'd do without him. About Steve, it's a really lovely... It's a mate moment.
Yeah, people were kind of saying that they were confused about why Kate was in occupational health, but it's because she killed Ryan. I know that they don't know that, but maybe they said, oh, she should go and have a chat because she witnessed, like, she nearly died, basically.
Yeah, fair enough. I felt like this part of the episode, it was just a bit, bits were just kind of shoved
Everything's rushed
in.
From here on.
It just felt all a bit shoved in and sort of just didn't just sit right with me. But look,
in. Don't get me wrong. Now, this was very bitty and a lot of the scenes didn't roll into each other. Like,
totally
it was night
agree,
to day.
Yeah.
It was here to there. But I was on BBC Radio Nottingham with the lovely Mark and they're just such lovely people there. They've had us on every week, basically, earlier on. And they asked me that question. And I'm like, guys, Joe Davidson tried to have Kate murdered. She saw your one being murdered in the lake and Terry being saved. She had to work with Ryan, who was a murderer. Like, she thought the gaffer was turning on her. Her mate has a painkiller addiction. She's in the middle of a divorce. She is co-parenting and doesn't get to see her son as much. Like, one of those things would have you in therapy.
Yeah,
like,
I'm
delighted that she's looking after her mental health.
Yeah.
Okay, so later Kate and Steve meet Carmichael. Kate tells her that Darren Hunter's involvement in the Lawrence Christopher murder was deliberately suppressed, we know now, by Buckles, Thirlwell and Osborne. And just a reminder that Darren Hunter is Tommy Hunter's son. But Kate has opened a new inquiry at MIT because she's currently heading up the unit now that Buckles and Joe are gone. Steve wants a parallel AC-12 inquiry opened. While Thirlwell gave the order at the time, some of the bent officers are still out there, he says. Now, I didn't pick up on that on my first two watches.
Neither did I.
Carmichael responds with, quote, historic corruption cases aren't a priority. And here's our Ted looking very dapper in an open blue shirt. He's lodged an appeal for retirement. The pair then watch the chief constable make a statement on Gail Vella. He commends his officers and once again denies institutionalized police corruption. Ted is fuming and delivers a very lengthy, too long, I think, impassioned speech against the police corruption about truth and integrity, containing a number of lines of juicy. Reb, do you have them here?
None of this could have happened without the willful blindness of those in power, and those in power should be held to account. It devastates me that we have stopped standing up for accountability and we've stopped caring about truth and integrity because it is these institutional failures that enable the likes of Ian Buckles to be corrupt.
Gorgeous. Okay, out he storms. But hang on, Ted's had a change of heart. Back to Patricia Carmichael he goes to confess about John Corbett and the 50K. What do you expect me to do with that information? Asks Pat. Drag it into season 7, I say. Now, he finishes by with a word of advice for Patricia Carmichael, who is about to take over as the head of AC12.
Whatever you do, do it because you care about truth and accountability. You do it because you carry the fire.
Oh, I actually loved that, now I have to say.
Same.
Ted then meets Kate and Steve to dramatically descend in the lift together as mates, as AC12.
Now, I wasn't mad on that CGI lift, lads. It was a bit naff.
The CGI lift, it looked like someone put a television in a lift. It was a bit shite, but I have to say, and I've seen a lot of people tweeting about how naff it looked, Line of Duty has very naff bits. If you go back and rewatch from the start, there is such cheesy looks, like the Tony Gates, Jackie Laverty, like help some of those Tony scenes, they look like they were shot in the 80s, and I'm sorry, that's what I love about Line of Duty. Okay. It's so cool, but it's so naff, and I loved it. The season wraps with a gorgeous sort of monologue, wrap-up of everything, epilogue, don't know what you call it. We learn that criminal proceedings against Terry have been dropped. He has been rehoused and reunited with his girlfriend and family. Farida is out and reinstated to active duty. God love her, we haven't seen her in
poor Farida
months.
Deserved more than just a quick mention at the end.
She was gaslighted the
That's
whole
total
time
bastard
by
bollocks.
It is.
Yeah, she, yeah, God love her. Like, Darren Hunter is under investigation for the murder of Lawrence Christopher under the watchful eye of Chris Lomax. I'm telling you now, guys, there's something going on with him. Mm-hmm. Joe Davidson is living inside Kate Winslet's cottage from The Holiday, complete with new girlfriend and dog and the most stunning driveway anyone's ever seen. Buckles is banged up in a maroon Fruit of the Loom as he is in the vulnerable prisoners unit with immunity potentially on the way. The anti-corruption merger continues, and meanwhile, AC12's powers to curb wrongdoing in public office have never been weaker. And that, my loves, is a Line of Duty Season 7 wrapped.
Hannah, well done.
Hannah, well
really explained
done.
It so
fair
well.
Play to you. I tweeted earlier, so Joe's girlfriend at the end, I honestly thought she looked really familiar. At first, I thought she was a pussycat doll. And then I thought maybe I'd seen her in Emmerdale or something years ago. But I couldn't find. She's not credited on IMDb. I tweeted to ask, did anyone know who the actor was? Nobody knows. But the general consensus seems to be that she was part of the crew. And just for safety reasons, because they've been working together, that she just did that like non-speaking scene.
Oh, wow.
That she may have just been part of the Line of Duty crew, but it's unconfirmed.
Her hair was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, some people thought it was Carly Kirk for a while in the first watch. They were tweeting us, guys, I cried my eyes out when I watched this for a second time and saw Terry being when he got his home after.
Yeah,
like, oh
so
my goodness.
Nice.
It was so emotional. And Joanne Davidson, the dog. Jill Bigelow would be fuming.
Because Jill Bigelow has been absolutely robbed of that. That's the glamour that woman deserves. Not
like
that Jill doesn't deserve it.
Where did she get a dog and a girlfriend and literally that house on $500,000? Like, come on. Like, is that available in witness protection? Like, what the fuck was that?
Maybe.
And how did she meet the girlfriend so fast?
Her jumper as well, very Sarah Lund, if anyone watched The Killing.
It honestly
her
looked,
jumper was
it
stunning.
It looked like an
M&S
ad or a John Lewis ad. It really did.
We got amazing tweets. First person, like, a bold move, dropping the John Lewis Christmas ad in May.
Yes.
I saw another brilliant one. It's like witness protection, and then there's M&S witness protection, and it was like a shot of what Jill Bigelow got and what Joe got. And like, I know that Joe was coerced. I know that she had a terrible life, but she did agree to murder Kate.
Yeah.
Guys,
like,
I
want to
hear your
it.
Thoughts on the finale, like just a few lines each of like what you thought.
Okay.
I do want to know.
I've notes.
I think that it is a TV drama, and I understand that Jeb Mercurio was trying to draw comparisons between, you know, a bumbling fool promoted to the highest office, and he used it to make a political statement. And I think that's fine, but I also wanted more action, and I did want to lose in one way or another, whether or not it was confirmed before the end of the episode that Ted was being forced to retire. I wanted to lose somebody who we cared about so that I felt distraught at the end. I just feel like it had been building to that. overall, I was a little underwhelmed. I felt a little bit flat. I liked who H ended up being. I like that it's Buckles. He's been there since episode one, season one. He was on the golf course with Tommy Hunter. He let Dot into the back of the prison van to speak to Tommy Hunter.
Yeah.
Like, he's been there the whole time. So I'm fine with that. I loved the van switch. The van switch was fucking incredible. I just wish they had done more with that scene. And the end felt a bit rushed. I would have maybe changed the ending so that, like, we lost somebody and it just ended on a more emotional note. That's kind of what I think.
I completely agree with Brendan. Pretty much everything you said there. I took some notes when I was watching it. I wrote, I don't give a shite about Ted and the money. Could this not have been dealt with earlier? I really didn't feel like that was a storyline to bring into the final episode. We saw all of that with Ted on screen last season. We didn't need to see Steve and Kate figuring it out, unless it was also us figuring it out for the first time. Also, Jed revealed to the press after season 5 what conversation Ted had with Lee Banks. So it just sort of really felt that it didn't need to be drawn out, especially not in the last episode. I didn't feel like there were any major repercussions or payoff for Steve's painkiller issues other than his gun was removed. But that gun being removed should have had a major issue later on, in the sense that he was put in a dangerous situation without a firearm. I felt the Gail Vella murder reveal was anticlimactic, considering it was a huge part of the first half of the season and a big part of the marketing that the BBC put out around the show.
Lies cost lives. They didn't, what? Apparently.
Yeah. I felt the Fairbanks reveal didn't land. Did he even know that he was Joe's father? I felt that, as you said, Brendan, Jed seemed to go for the realism, which I really like. He kept it real in some ways, but then not in others, because he went for a very happy, clappy ending, giving Joe this Hollywood-style finish with the girlfriend, the dog, the gorgeous jumper, and the house.
Yeah.
But if we're going to keep it real, let's keep it real.
And you know what? We're all sick of real life. I want to tune in at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night to see drama and over the top. I do. That's what I wanted from it.
Yeah, and I have to say, I loved the Buckles reveal as H. It makes complete sense. It connects all the way back. It's what I wanted, in the sense that you'll go back and watch the seasons now and watch them differently. However, that discovery was done off screen. It was Chloe figuring it out and then bringing the information and presenting it to the guys. Show us, don't tell us.
Yeah.
Let's see it happen. Like, let's, as we spoke about earlier on, let's catch Buckles in the action and then have to go and find the definitely proof later on. Get him to write something down. Do you know what I mean? I honestly thought when we saw the handwriting clips ahead of time that they were going to get everyone to write a sentence or something and he was going to get caught out. Like, I just wanted to see it more in action. I think it would have been cool in the end. This is actually my sister's feedback. If he ended up being a genius, if we had this almost like promising young woman moment in the glass box where he gets caught and his personality changes. And
I wanted to see Roz Horn went all badass when she was pulling out all of the figures about the Masons and the women not being hired and everything. She was armed. She was ready to go with all of that information. I kind of would have loved that as well. I agree with everything you guys are saying.
But then I went on the rewatch, I was like, actually, I get the point that Jed is making, that he's an idiot and he didn't need to be a mastermind to tie it all together. Where was Chloe's commendation? Like, every time another officer, Dot, Kate or Steve, has done police work to that level, they always end in that little epilogue at the end with a commendation. I felt there was no sort of payoff for her. And I can't decide whether I felt it was rushed or too slow. I kind of feel like a 90-minute episode cutting out some of the stuff would have actually been way better and way more ramped up. And I really can't figure out if I felt there was too much story in there, like the random, like Kate having therapy, or whether there was too little. So look, they're my thoughts, but I have to say, I really liked it and I'm really happy with Buckles. And my main thought finishing the episode, before I went on Twitter, I was actually really surprised by everyone's reaction, was relief that it looks like we're getting a season 7.
In the words of Ted Hastings, I need more. I agree with everything you guys are saying. Obviously, police corruption doesn't end with just a fourth person. I still think that it's Chief Constable Osborne, and he now has his close colleagues working in AC12, which is so suspicious.
Yeah.
And that was something that I missed on the first watch at the very end. So I'm hoping that Ted, Kate and Steve take him down next season once it's confirmed. Now, obviously, there's mixed responses, guys. And it is in a way more realistic, because in life, corruption is covered up. The baddies don't get their comeuppance, and sometimes you don't get all the answers. Okay. But regardless of how you felt about the finale, I thought season six was a triumph. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that the cliffhangers, the chases, the shootouts, I mean, we were gifted every single week for the last 7 weeks. There's no TV show like it.
Episode five was just unbelievable.
Just because you don't like one finale doesn't mean the show isn't incredible and the cast, crew and the writer aren't fantastic. Ted said to Carmichael, carry the fire. And I think that's what us fans have to do. We have to carry the fire for Line of Duty, for AC-12, our beloved trio, and our passion for it. And we'll get some more. Let's just hope we get some more.
Yeah, and just to make one more point is that good TV and good writing is meant to make you have a reaction. It's meant to make you feel something and to speak about it. And good art makes spark conversations and all that. And even though perhaps the reaction isn't what the cast or crew were going for, I don't think it was a surprise because they all knew that it wasn't this big shootout, urgent, exit required season three, episode six style ending. It was a slower, more dialogue heavy ending. And that doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad thing. It's just not what people were expecting. And we're all still talking about it. We have probably done our longest conversation to date on any episode because there is so much talkability. And I think with this season, a lot of what Jed wanted to do was to bring up the Daniel Morgan murder, was to bring up institutionalized racism and corruption, was to make his political points. As you said, Brendan, Gail Vella was based on a real person. There was the Stephen Lawrence, that was a real person, Lawrence Christopher in the show was based on the Stephen Lawrence trial. I think he was trying to make people turn and Google and Wikipedia these things, which he's still done successfully, even if people aren't thrilled with how the finale went.
Okay, some social theories, Reb.
Okay, lots of reaction to the episode. Some were disappointed. I won't read out those. First up, AC12 Ninja actually predicted that Buckles would be H. On Twitter on the 27th of April, they wrote, Jed Mercurio hates Boris Johnson. That's why he made the big villain someone who cultivated a fake bumbling clown persona and kept it up for years. Seems to have come up with the H storyline while writing season four as a new direction after the caddy plot had finished. And who did he bring back for season four after two seasons without him? Buckles. AC12 Ninja has a great thread about this, well worth the look, but really did had the answers before we got to see it.
Great.
Now, Apple Sticker on Twitter says, what do you think Carmichael will do with Ted's news? You know, she's not bad, is she? Just a pen pusher that has been focusing on pleasing her bosses and hence her career at the expense of doing what is right. If I'm honest, I wish Ted hadn't told her all of those things because she can use it against him. I don't think we saw enough Carmichael in this episode, to be honest with you.
No, she was just looking across as Buckles was being walked in. And even when Ted went in to confess to her, which he didn't owe her, yeah, she just didn't really react that much.
Again, though, I do think it's setting up season seven because Carmichael has been working under Osborne and for Osborne, thinking that it's all gospel. What he does is great. And is that the first time she realises that she's been working for the baddie?
Yeah,
I caught that
possibly.
In her eyes, and I think we are going to be loving Carmichael next season, guys. I think she's going to, against everything, every fibre of her being, turn and do the right thing.
Yes. Feminist Killjoy on Twitter wrote, I love the ending. The institution is the fourth man. The institution that promotes corrupt men with corruption disguised as incompetence, abuses power to deny abuses of power, declares it is not institutionally corrupt or racist. The end is a needed critique. Sally agrees, saying lots of people seem to think there would be crazy stuff happening, but I found it beautifully emotional and put the focus back on the big three and their relationship with each other. Now, it was suggested by a number of people to watch the finale for a second time. One person did do that. His name was Matt Taylor and it didn't go down well a second time for him.
Oh no.
No, he just said, you know, oh, Jesus, it hasn't Matt. Got any better for me. He's like, I just don't think Jed could write the finale or a competent ending. So he wasn't happy, right?
Okay.
But Pink Flower Power said as well that they rewatched and still think it went out with a whimper. I get what Jed was trying to do. And as I've said throughout, the reference to actual corruption added to the story, but Line of Duty is a drama. We need closure.
I completely agree.
She also says, I'll accept it if there is a season seven. And I think that is very true. Lynn Brown says, the last episode needs to be watched in two parts, with the Buckles glass box interview being the start of the second part. I just went back and watched it again from there. It was immense, unbelievable, and it was pure greed and incompetency. Did I say that right? That foiled AC12, a brilliant ending. And it's true, Hannah, when you explained that kind of that chess move, I know I'd seen it and I knew at the time, but there were a few lines in there that really do better explain the whole thing. Alex B says that H was more recently confirmed to be a fourth person on par with Dot, Jill, Hilton, not the big boss. And Buckles' smirk at the end clearly showed his satisfaction at continuing to protect the big boss. Mark Gray says, I don't think we have the full context of the finale until we see a seventh season. It felt like lots of setting up of future storylines as well as closing off other ones.
Yeah. Just really quickly, I want to ask you guys, do you think if you knew that the BBC had confirmed a seventh season before you watched that episode that you would have thought it better than you did?
Or even at the end, you know, because I think after one season, it did come up and say to be continued. I'm sure that if they did that, it would sit a little better with me. Yeah, exactly.
I would have preferred that. Monkey Thumbs on Twitter says, Series 6 was a great ride, a great cast, great writing and great production. The ending was heartbreaking as promised, but let's not diss the show that has kept on giving since 2012. A great point. And I saw a really hilarious tweet from someone called Claire Biddles, who says, I've never watched Line of Duty, but my friend Helen used to work in the props department and once wrote her ex-boyfriend's name on a tag for one of the bodies in the morgue.
It was so good. Like, that is like the ultimate like revenge against an ex. So petty and so brilliant. I love
that level of pettiness. There are some of the many social theories that we got in. Thank you so much for getting in touch at Shrine Pod.
I've been reading all of your emails. Thank you so, so much for all of your like lovely messages about the podcast. We really appreciate them. We've read and seen them all, and they're just lovely, so thank you. The emails, two categories, the same, underwhelmed. So some of the loved it's, Felicity says, the more I think about it, the more I think it was perfect for it to be Buckles. The show makes us the detectives, and for the last six seasons Buckles has actively screwed investigations up on multiple occasions, but almost all of us have just put it down to sheer incompetence rather than being actively bent, just like his colleagues at AC12 did throughout. He's also anti-Ted. Regardless, surely the point is that it's not as simple as just four bent coppers, but that the police force is riddled with corruption, despite what Osborne and Pat tried to say. Finally, I'm personally really happy with the ending, as I'm certain that it's left open for another series. Actually, I'm also just going to really quickly mention, we got quite a few emails from people saying that they were unhappy with how the Joe and Kate will they won't they romance was never resolved, and they said they've said that this amounts to what they've called queer baiting, and it basically they're afraid that some younger gay people or people who are not out will watch this and that it could be quite damaging. And they've said that this has happened in a few dramas, that like it being unresolved can make some gay people feel unseen or
unrepresented.
That they're not worth resolving the storyline for. So just a couple of, we got a few emails about that.
I never thought of that actually.
Yeah, I didn't think about it either.
I mean, regardless of sexuality or anything like that, or what you identify as, I do think in life you do sometimes have a thing with someone or with, you know, different people in your life, and sometimes it just never really goes anywhere, and it just ends because of circumstances or timing or different things.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just that it was never meant to be. It can't be.
Yeah, totally.
Because she's in witness protection.
And there's a few, there's a few things like that, that were just never resolved. So I don't think it's specific to them and their sexuality.
But I guess that people have picked up on that though.
Yeah. We've another email from Joe Gunn who says, okay, the country's lost it, but you can't really blame the people after the year we've had. 60 minutes could have done being 90. Some bits felt rushed. The ambush offering Joe four words, even Buckles' glass box, less than spectacular until the mugs part at the end. However, and to say this without condescending, some people will have got the point and not enjoyed the point, fine, but many, many people on Twitter missed the point, even as Ted rammed it home. Yes, we thought we were looking for a fourth man who's a criminal mastermind, but twist, we found the fourth man, but we found no criminal mastermind, just an incompetent, continuously overpromoted, greedy bent copper taking orders from anyone who's willing to pay, and some people found that a complete cop-out. So Joe loved the episode. Claire Dickinson, I know the reaction's been negative from what I can see, so I just want to say I really liked the last episode. The more I think about it, the more I think it was spot on. I understand why people were expecting more, but this was a realistic ending. Line of Duty's never been James Bond, where there's a big bad genius villain who is going to be revealed and caught. Organised crime is in reality more like, and we got a few emails about this, Hydra, is it like Greek mythology, the serpent, you cut the head off and another one grows?
Oh,
we've actually had a few emails mentioning Hydra.
Yeah.
I think that's what that means.
That's really, that's yeah. Like,
Rickman loved the overall series, but would have liked something a bit more explosive to round off the story in the final episode. He said his main criticism would be that if it was going to be Buckles being the stooge for the OCGs, which was believable within the story, that we'd have seen a bit more OCG action or involvement in the episode. Rachel Byrne says it was the ending we needed. It brought together lots of loose ends. Gail Vella, the fourth man, Chicken Licken's cash in the attic, Steve's painkillers addiction, Terry, Joe's history, Hunter and the OCGs. Yes, we love chases and the shootouts of the glass boxes, but not all the time. My blood pressure and mental health can't take that level of tension every week. I feel the feeling of anticlimax is deliberate on Jed's part. It shows a slowing down of the pace. This gives us time and space to breathe, reflect, and join up the dots. I love it.
Brilliant. I totally agree.
Some underwhelming emails then as well. Leah Martin sent us a really long email. Thank you so much, Leah. But said, I don't want to be too critical because I still love the show and I love the cast and I completely love the series up until the last episode. I feel so sad at the thought of Martin, Vicky and Adrian waking up, seeing how disappointed the majority of people were because they were amazing throughout.
Amazing.
I honestly couldn't have felt more deflated last night if they'd announced another lockdown. Joseph Williams says, really disappointed. Why the fuck did the last 10 minutes feel like some terrible dream? And the final CGI shot with the lift, Ted looked like a cardboard cutout. What the fuck? Rachel McCarthy says, yes, it felt a bit underwhelming, but that's what Jed Mercurio does to you. He knew what he was doing by Steve and Kate's scripted reaction. They were like, that's it. Like, that's, it was right under our noses.
This whole time.
They were like, that can't be. Yeah. Colin Dunn, got to say, slightly disappointed. Thought it seemed rushed. Should have been a bigger glass box scene with Buckles. And we should have seen more from the van being intercepted. Absolutely. Heather Smith thought the finale was completely underwhelming, waiting for an exciting twist to happen, but it didn't. Vandra Dyke says, so many loose ends. Who forged Joe's production order? Why did Kate and Joe run? Who are the OCG bosses? Is Chris Lomax bent? Why did What's his name say to Steve in the van? Jimmy Lakewell, we found that out. Why didn't AC12... cop on earlier and look at all the suspicious Bent Copper's assets? And guys, the last email I'm going to finish season 6 with is an alternative ending written by a man called David Waddington. Email to us.
Oh my god,
shrinepod@gmail.com. guys, are you ready for this?
Let me get comfy now and I'm really
okay,
excited.
Get comfy. So David Waddington's alternative ending to Line of Duty season 6. Hastings, Arnott and Fleming descend in the lift, leaving AC12 building. Night outside, cut to the grill crossing road. Followed a brief goodbye as Hastings goes in one direction, Steve and Kate in another. Arnott and Fleming seen walking, then turn down a side street and walk into a deserted car park. D.I. Arnott says, lift mate. Fleming goes, cheers mate. Fleming and Arnott approach Steve's car and he unlocks it. They hover, study to the side of the car, ready to open the doors and climb in. Looking at Steve, Fleming says, so where do we go from here? Arnott smiles and looks set to respond. Out of shot, a male voice says, this is as far as you both go. Cut to Arnott's puzzled reaction. Gaffer? Hastings emerges from the shadows, suppressed pistol in hand, fires gun. Kate drops to the floor, presumed dead. Arnott, Gaffer, why? Kate, oh my god, Kate. He scrabbles around the vehicle to Kate's side, kneeling. With gun pointing to Steve, H, where do you think the OCG got the idea of planting their own as police officers? My people came up with that a long time ago, fella. We invented deep, deep undercover. Even after I'd served my purpose and the troubles were behind us, I've enjoyed taking the likes of you for a haven't I? Headlights flash across Arnott's confused and panic-stricken face. Cut to a black Range Rover, pulls up close to scene. The driver's door opens. Out steps Steph Corbett. Arnott says, Steph, what the hell? You and him? Steph, at the time, Steve, I said it was fine. But truth be told, you should have fucked me when you had the chance.
Oh my god!
Pulls gun and fires. Arnott slumps over Kate's already lifeless body. With no remorse or reaction, Steph turns to Ted and goes, ready, H? And Ted says, that I am, love. That I am. Hastings removes suppressor and pockets it along with the pistol, turns up the collar of his coat, takes out a cigar and lights it. He walks to passenger side. Steph climbs in, driver's side, and they pull away. Driver's side passes camera. Windows roll up as H and Steph exchange a glance and smile and cut to black.
Oh my god, someone give that man a job.
I'm sweating as
David
if that actually
Waddington,
happened.
Thank you
David
so
Waddington
much
is going to be writing a BBC drama.
For that alternative
drama.
Ending, it was incredible.
But David Waddington, that's what everyone was expecting on Sunday night. That's the level of deceit and twist that 11 million people sat down waiting for. And that's why maybe certain amazing parts of the show maybe went over people's heads, or do you know what I mean? That's what we were waiting for. Oh, I don't know. Now I'm kind of like, geez, that would have been brilliant if it actually happened.
Yeah, we were waiting for an urgent exit required. Now I'm going to move on quickly to what Jed said. He previously told people to watch the finale to the very end. So that's why I thought that there was going to be a to be continued. What were we watching to the end for? Was it Buckles a smirk?
Vigil,
the
I think.
Trailer the problem with Vigil,
the trailer
reckon.
For Vigil.
Ah, guys, stop. That, no.
Saran Jones being airlifted into a submarine.
I know, but like,
me.
Why would Jed be... I know, but it looks amazing, but why would Jed be like, watch the end of this to just see what a different series is
coming? Because he wrote
He's
it.
Promo
oh, did
it.
He,
yeah,
did he write
his.
It?
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah,
okay, Jed, sorry, I get it now. Okay, well, Jed obviously put up a cryptic tweet after the finale saying carry the fire, and he turned off the comments because people were going mad on Twitter. He was speaking to Craig Parkinson on the BBC podcast, and he said, it was really interesting chat. He said that he wanted, the hate reveal to be someone who's been there since the start, someone who doesn't care about honesty or integrity and could be open to being easily groomed by the OCG. He said the audience had built up this criminal mastermind in their heads and that Buckles was behind bars for half the season, so it really threw people off the scent.
Yeah, it
did. Yeah, brilliant.
It was announced that Line of Duty broke modern UK viewing records for the BBC. It was the most watched drama in decades, with almost 13 million people tuning in on Sunday night. Jed has responded to an article about this on Twitter that Brenton touched on earlier on. He said, "We're honoured and flattered by the viewing figures. We knew attempting to explore the real nature of corruption in our society wouldn't appeal to everyone, but we do sincerely thank you all for watching. It has been our privilege to share your Sunday nights." Martin Compson also put up a big post about the finale. And he said, you know, "We've been blown away by the response. We fully understand it wasn't the urgent exit type of ending, but we do appreciate you sticking with us." And he said, "Finally, myself, Vicky and Adrian and Jed made an agreement in the inconceivable and ridiculous scenario that we ever got to 12 million viewers that we would get AC 12 million tattoos. We'll see who's good in their word or to their word."
I wonder, will they check and licking out?
Imagine. And obviously the big question on everyone's lips is there going to be season 7? Well, Charlotte Moore, who is the chief content officer in the BBC, says she is looking forward to having a conversation with the team about where we go next and what the future of the series might be. "I think we'll all look back on this series 6 finale very differently if we get the epic season 7 that we deserve."
Yeah, I think so.
Reb, I couldn't agree more. Like, we didn't cover the show live until the last season. Not all of the first 4 seasons ended massively or perfectly, but looking back now, it's the best show on television. It all leads into the next series. It all connects. It all makes sense. It's all true to the story. Like, what Jed wrote is true to the story. Like, you cannot argue that Buckles being H is the perfect fit. And if that leads into a big, massive, major budget, 12 million people watching a week, season 7, and you're binge watching this on Netflix in a couple of years, I'm telling you now, everyone that had an issue on Sunday night is going to be happy out.
Okay, the winner of the season 1-6 Ooh. Line of Duty box set is Joanne Duffy. Congratulations, Ooh. Joanne. I have slid into your DMs to let you know. Okay, guys, that is it. Thank you. Seriously, thank you all so, so much for listening. For every single email, tweet and Instagram message, comment, like and share. Genuinely, the support from you has been overwhelming, if only the same could be said for the final episode. And to everyone who supports us on Patreon, including Mel P, Louise McCourt, Rose Smith, Anya McManus, Joe Black, James McShane and Dan Kelleher, and everyone else who supports us on Patreon, thank you for being ridiculously generous. Honestly, we really appreciate it. We wish we could say we're off on a getaway now to see Nigel Morton in Spain or Jo Davidson in her gorgeous cottage. But alas, we are still waiting to get vaccinated. So we'll just have to sit at home and stare out the window and probably scroll back through some of your lovely messages and have a laugh slash cry at how fun it's all been.
With a gin and tonic.
With a Jill and Tonic. We hope to be back with a couple of cast interviews, fingers crossed, shortly. And we are talking about what we're going to do next. So we will be back.
The Shriners always have something up their sleeves.
Guys, I just have to say it's been the most amazing 8 weeks from when we started this to now. And yeah, just thank you everyone for the birthday messages. That was a crazy week, for the opportunities to go on BBC and Reb on BBC Scotland, all of the incredible producers who have asked us to come on to their shows. Like, you've made days in lockdown so incredibly exciting and giddy and fun. The messages on Twitter, the comments, the emails, the DMs, people following us. Like, we started off this series with 7,000 Twitter followers, and I think we're over 17,000 now. And every single person sending really interesting and fascinating emails. It's just been a joy and a joy to talk to you guys every week. To have people listen is just a bonus, and thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts.
Line of Duty has been the light of our lives for the last 8 weeks and years before that, and you listening have been the light of ours. This show has changed our lives as well as it's changed the lives for everybody who watches it every week. So thank you so much for listening to Shrine of Duty. It has been an absolute blast, and I'm excited to see what happens next, guys. And bloody hell, Jed Mercurio, you're probably not listening now an hour and a half after this, but please write a season 7, because we need justice for Line of Duty, because you're too talented not to do it.
Please do. And thanks to you for listening until the very end. We're going to leave you now. I hope you carry the fire.
End of your terminated. Go on. Piss off.
This is TV Worth Talking About. So we want to hear what you have to say. Find Shrine Podcasts on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Shrine Pod.
When you find the right home, you want nothing to get in your way. That's why Laya Life offer mortgage protection in minutes, not weeks. Our fast, straightforward mortgage protection application process is the best way to keep your mortgage moving. No paperwork or medical, just a few simple questions and you're covered in an instant, starting at €2.33 per week. For mortgage protection that's streets ahead, visit layalife.ie or call 1890 907 100.
Insurance provided by IPTQ Life SA. Laya Healthcare Limited, trading as Laya Life and Laya Healthcare, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Your seventh video meeting of the day and you're starving. But what's this? You spy a bag of pop chips in the corner of the kitchen. I know. I'll just turn off my camera and... sour cream and onion. So good. What's not so good is your mic still on and everyone wants to know what you're eating. They're pop chips, popped, not fried, with less than 100 calories per bag. That's all the excuse they need. Soon everyone's taking a snack break. Pop chips. Start something good.